Welcome to Different Gravy, not just another Sheffield Wednesday podcast. I'm one of the hosts, Richard Miller. My co-host, Semolina Pilchard, climbing up the Eiffel Tower. Elementary Penguin, singing Hare Krishna. Man, you should have seen them kicking Edgar Allan Poe. He is the Eggman. He is the Eggman. He is the pod host. Luke. How are you doing today, Luke?
Good. I'm good. Is that because of Easter?
It's vaguely Easter themed.
You know, the period of time of our lives of every year where you know, the Bible and the Beatles just intersect perfectly.
Absolutely. Do you do the chocolate egg thing?
We do. We do. I mean, you know, Canada's a little bit Britain 2.0, but we have them of much, much lesser quality, but. No, I've snaffled a couple of cream eggs yesterday, and I'm contemplating some mini eggs a bit later on today, I'll be honest. How about you?
Excellent stuff.
Let's do an egg check.
I've done some cream egging.
we all have in our day, haven't we? Let's be honest.
Struck by the absurdity of the sentence there, mid-mouthful. So I'm doing a kind of like Easter take two next weekend. I'm going to spend the weekend with my mother, and I will receive an egg in that transaction, I believe. So I'll look forward.
You'd be pissed if not, wouldn't you?
Oh, there'll be.
Where's my fucking egg, mother?
Dave Allen style table bashing.
Oh, it's good to be back, Rich.
It is good to be back. Absolutely. I found a recipe, and I really should put recipe in like sort of inverted commas, where you get a kind of Just Roll or a Pillsbury pack of croissants that you make yourself. And essentially what the recipe is you whack a cream egg in the middle of the croissant pastry
and then
kind of form a ball around it, put it in the air fryer for 5 minutes or so, and you've created a delightful dessert, which is just a kind of cream egg that's been melted in a croissant. It's not bad. It's good to be said.
Interesting. So we'll put that in the show notes then.
Yeah, the recipe. Take one pack of cream eggs.
Maybe in our senior years of podcasting, we'll just have like a recipe every week, I think.
That could work. Yeah. So it is nice to be back. We're just, this is a bit kind of out of the blue, but we just wanted to have a check-in with us, with ourselves, with each other, see how we're feeling, have a bit of a vibe check. We stand. We've got the last seven games of the season, so it's a bit of a look back. Recent form, the impact of, because last time we spoke was right at the start of the real rain. So, what do we make of the manager, this fearless young chap in charge, and what are we feeling about our prospects between now and the end of the season? So to give some sort of semblance to this, I've sort of roughly, we're probably not going to be able to keep strictly to these categories, but the idea was we'll have a little look back at the transfer window and see what we made of that. And now in retrospect, there was some hot takes at the time, but we're now a couple of months on from that. So how are we feeling about the additions that we made there? Have a look at recent form and recent sort of way the team's set up and things like that. A little bit of a zero in on the man himself, Danny Rowe. And then a bit of a check of how we're feeling for the last few games. So yeah, transfer window wise, what's your take now? Well, what was your feeling at the time as the window slammed shut And where do you sit now?
I mean, at the time, it were accustomed to playing the games of being a Sheffield Wednesday fan, of seeing a bit of a game of transfer window chicken. But I guess everybody kind of does it to a certain degree. And I mean, we got some pretty sizable stuff done early. Maybe I don't know if I was... We always live in some kind of, you know, perennial hope of Sheffield Wednesday fans. But I don't know if I was disappointed or whether I wasn't maybe tempered a little bit of the kind of feel of disappointment that we had among the kind of fan base in total. You know, we live in times with avenues such as social media and message boards for people to knee-jerk in record time. We get to see those reactions pretty darn quickly. But I think it felt pretty close. I guess the interesting thing now is, I mean, let's kind of run down. I feel like everything we needed, we kind of ticked off. I think maybe there's just always, there's always an appetite for a very high profile striker.
Yes. I also feel I wonder if Ogbo would, obviously you can't make things fall perfectly in line, but if Ogbo had maybe like started, because he went on a great tear of form after the end of the transfer window, which I think made the transfer window in retrospect feel a lot better. I think if he'd hit the ground running to that extent and just kind of gone off with a goal or two to begin with, because it was almost like people were still going like, oh, why haven't we signed a striker when, as you say, it was one of the first things. Really, the big things were goalkeeper, striker, and we did those in the first week or so. But it was almost like Ogbo was taken for granted by the time we got to the end of the window, and there was this real hunger for another striker or a proper striker. I think it might have been if he'd managed to bag, which he was very close to doing, he hit the woodwork a couple of times in his first couple of games. If he'd managed to bag just a touch earlier, it might have probably made things look a bit rosier. So the first addition was James Beadle. Mm-hmm. And we also, prior to that, I think Buckley went back as well. What have you made of Beadle so far?
Beadle's been an interesting one that, like, I mean, in terms of a signing and his stature and everything we heard, you know, he's from a great stable. He's a Premier League up-and-coming youngster. He's had a decent spell, seemingly loved and very highly spoken about at Oxford. Very depressed. Yes. The fans seem very depressed when Brighton yoinked him back to then, you know, send him to us as a result. Seems everything we wanted on paper, seemed a bit of the Bailey Peacock Farrell kind of replacement, maybe in terms of an idea.
Yeah.
Just great on paper. When he's come, maybe a little bit of a kind of slightly unconvincing start to the procedure.
Yeah.
Since then...
Yeah,
I mean, since then, I think I've tried to be very kind of diplomatic, and I feel like he has a certain level of quality that I think was still kind of hinted upon, just with a few kind of foibles here and there. But I think the beginning, it just made us kind of think and kind of question, especially with like a mild kind of, I felt like near the end of the year, if I remember correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong, like, Dawson seemed a little bit, seemed some of the brighter patch of form from Dawson near that time. You know, did he make some very high profile penalty saves?
Oh, didn't he have like a week where he sort of showed all of his good bits and some of his bad bits?
Pretty much. I mean, but I feel like just this level of resignation regarding Dawson that, like, you know, to see some good bits is enough to make me not so upset and not so angry, really, considering it's just a pretty sad resignation about who we have and who he is, you know?
Absolutely. I think that's it. So we had the heroics of the Cardiff FA Cup game where he saved two penalties in the first 10 minutes. And then we went into the game with Southampton, which obviously was going to be difficult anyway, but we went into the game with Southampton and we lost 4-0. And I think at least two of those, I think the first goal was just a complete fumble out of nowhere for Dawson, which he can have these lapses in concentration that just are inexplicable for someone who's as experienced as he now is. Mm. He should, the sort of lapses you let a youngster away with, he still makes as a sort of full grown goalkeeper. So I think that was it. We kind of, in the same week, we almost had but he is quite good, but also he does have these mm-hmm. hours. I think it's tricky with Beadle. I think clearly he's a world away in terms of intention when he's got the ball at his feet compared to Dawson. Sometimes I think his ambition outweighs his ability. So I think he tries to do things that maybe he's not quite able to pull off as in quite the way he'd maybe like to. But you can tell he's trying to have that picture that you can only have as a goalkeeper and see opportunities to play the ball forward in perhaps a more interesting way than just palming it off to the nearest defender. He doesn't like it coming to his left foot. That's definitely a weakness that he needs to keep working on, because I do think at this level you almost need to be equally gifted with both feet as a goalkeeper now. You can't have a swinger and one you like kicking it with, because you'll always have that doubt in your head about, oh, if I could just get this onto my right. You can't have that thought. There's no time for that thought. Mm. But it's a bit hard because I think we'll obviously get to talk about the manager. But it is, I think from a goalkeeper's point of view, we've talked probably for the majority of this podcast, it's been a kind of running thread of, oh, a good goalkeeper's worth 6 points a season. They can gain you points. And it's tricky in a way because you end up almost, I feel like, with the fact that Roll is so anti-parking the bus, we end up with, you either keep a clean sheet or you let in a hatful, and that's quite hard from a goalkeeper's point of view. It's quite difficult, but also from an assessing that goalkeeper, it's quite difficult because it's like, well, he's probably got like clean sheets in about half the games he's played for us, but we've also let in 6 goals, 4 goals, you know, like multiples of goals several times. And I don't think he's totally to blame for that, but you do wonder if somebody, unfortunately, it's a bit like Vasquez earlier in the season. We've got somebody who's a bit better than Dale Dawson, but not streets ahead.
Yeah.
And we know that streets ahead.
But I don't think we've kind of seen, I think we've seen some consistency at some parts that's pretty decent. I don't know whether we've seen those flakes of quality and brilliance that I felt we maybe saw with Bailey, even though I feel very similar in that mentality. Yeah. Young goalkeeper from a big outfit coming on who seems having a lot of promise, and you know, their development is and potential is huge. Very much the same for them, both of them. Bailey's maybe a touch older and maybe slightly taken some kind of slightly different ways, but still a very decent player. But you know, like it feels a little bit like, I remember the was it the Ipswich game for Bailey where he made the old clanger of having the ball in his hand and then the player, you know, in very kind of
rolling
comical
out with the player
Danny Baker own goals and gaffs kind of vibe from the 80s or early 90s, I should say. Like it was that, and I feel like there's a bit of like, you know, I hope he learns, but we're not going to see the benefit of that. We're paying the cost for his expense and his lesson that he's taken here. So
yeah,
I think over it, you know, but again, I mean, it is an improvement. It's definitely improvement on Dawson. It's the improvement we know we needed. It's, it's kind of nice to be vindicated, vilified. I'm not sure the exact V word, but it's nice to just have
feel like it's something that you've seen as a fan.
That is a bit of a weakness, and that we've improved upon. So, yeah. I mean, it is an improvement. I guess I'm just not 100% wowed as of yet.
Yeah. Yeah, qualified success.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it was nice to see that goalkeeper was one of our main aims, because I think most fans could see. There's a kind of loyalty to Dawson, and I understand it.
Mm.
Hometown boy and stuff like that. But
how?
I think most sensible fans can see that he's just not, particularly at this level, he's just not good enough.
So,
and I think Beadle's at least good enough to make that not a debate anymore.
Yeah. To kind of look and think about the whole classic, you know, goalkeeper's worth X points, do you think we've seen that from Beadle so far?
It's been a mixed bag, really. I do think it's the errors he's made have tended to be with his feet rather than anything that inherently goalkeeping related, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
I do think broadly, kind of saw it in the England game midweek. I think broadly fans are getting educated to the point where you almost understand it's going to happen sometimes that the goalkeeper is just going to not play the right pass. And when a goalkeeper doesn't play the right pass, it nearly always results in a goal.
Mm.
At the top level anyway. So I think it's sort of forgivable. It's been forgivable bits of goalkeeping error. By and large, I think he's a pretty good shot stopper. He's pretty good at making sure it gets away from him, which has been one of the constant gripes with Dawson, that it gets saved, but it gets saved into a position that's just so easily followed up. And we stand like statues as we watch somebody just poke it home. So I think Beadle, there's been a lot less of those sort of errors. I've not really noticed any handling errors from him or anything. So I think there has been, but I've not seen a star making performances. I mean, we've got used to, under people like Westwood and Kirkland, we know what those goalkeeping performances look like.
Yeah.
And it's playing out of your skin, and you walk away just like, holy hell, we would have been battered today if it wasn't for the goalkeeper.
Exactly.
Or we would have lost today if it wasn't. And I don't know that he's had one of those kind of king-making, star-making performances yet. Not to my mind.
Very true.
I think passable, much better on the all round. He's much better at commanding his box. He's much better at talking, which I think all helps. Better with the ball at his feet. I think goalkeeping wise, it feels like he gets by. He's fine, but he's not done anything stupendous in that realm yet. To my mind. Okay, goodo. Are we happy to move on from Mr. Beadle?
Let's do that.
So then we come to Ogbo, who we sort of talked a little bit about already. But Ike Ogbo, you're a fellow Canadian.
Fellow Canadian like me. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they're a bit like you as well in many ways.
So many ways.
He's got one of those Canadian accents.
I know. The whole 5 years he spent from ages 4 to 9 in Ontario, whatever it was.
I've been pretty much from the get go impressed with Ogbo. I think he's a good goal scorer. I think he's got good instincts, but I also think he's just been ideally suited. It feels to me like a really well scouted player, in that he really suits our style of play. He can almost be a one man pressing army. I know we lost to Leeds, but he had nothing to feed off in the Leeds game, and he nearly made like two or three goals himself in that first half, just with being clever about how he pressed and kind of like shadowing his run a little bit, but then moving in on when they made a mistake or they tarried on the ball. His he works his socks off. It's so many times you'll see him work all the way back to our box, even when he's supposed to be up front, which I know you could level as a criticism, but I like that spirit. I think it feels like he knows he's at a bit of a crossroads in his career. He's been a promising youngster, and that's passed. He's ended up in the second division in France, and I think he's seen what he doesn't, you know, tasted lots of bits of the football life, and he now knows where he'd like to be in that pyramid, ideally. And it feels like he's sort of digging his heels in and trying to make something of himself. Because I think he sort of said, when asked about his future, he wants to be playing in England again next season. I think he's maybe sort of intimated it'd be nice if it was with us. Obviously, there's lots of things would need to happen to make that fall into place. But for whatever he's been elsewhere, and he kind of came with mixed reviews from Cardiff, for us, I just think he's been ideal. And he's been very unlucky not to. He's got a good amount of goals. He could have had probably another 4 or 5. He's hit the woodwork probably 5 times, as far as I can remember. Yeah. He hit the woodwork again on Saturday. But he turns so well on the ball. He makes chances for other people. Yeah, I just think we couldn't have hoped for much better, really, in our position.
I find it hard to say anything else other than what you've said, Rich. I'm going to be honest with you. I guess it's just the interesting thing with the narrative. Like, it felt like we were probably getting someone else like Musaba as well. Like, someone who is someone who can kind of... Musaba is someone who, you know, deceptively good at striking the ball and finishing. But really just kind of... just like one of those kind of porous, free roll kind of striking players who just makes things happen on the wings and gets in the middle as well and does it all across that attacking third effectively. And I wondered if something like that was probably going to happen for Ugbo. He didn't look or sound like what I felt that Wednesday fans felt we needed. I think we still think in very... We all do. I think we, especially football fans from the north of England, think in very conventional ways about the game. And, you know, I think we were kind of thinking, like, where is the poacher, you know?
Yeah.
And I think any kind of profile we probably guessed and gave Ugbo probably looked over the idea that he was going to be the one to fill that role. And he's done that just with such aplomb, you know, with a class. How have we managed to just kind of unearth a diamond like this? Honestly,
yeah, absolutely, yeah. Because we know players don't necessarily want to come to clubs in our position. You don't want a relegation.
No.
CV.
Mm-hmm.
I know we as fans look at it and go, "Well, why wouldn't you want to be part of a great escape or whatever?" But that's not necessary. The players have no kind of like stake in a particular club or not, but they know that there's a bit of a negative stink that kind of carries with you if you've got relegation. You know, you end up with these players like, well, it's a bit like Hendrick. You're like, oh, so great. So he goes, basically, like, last 3 clubs he's played for have got relegated, and you're like, great. Well, when he comes, you know that you're good luck for the rest of your season. Yeah. If you've got Hendrick joining you, then it's a bit of a sign that the sick is the ship is sinking.
The shit also as well.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just floating and you can't flush it. I don't know.
The sink is shipping goals, and that's when you turn to Jeff Hendrick to run about a bit.
For all your plumbing needs.
We saw him on the bench again. That was a surprise. I thought he was a personal squash partner or whatever it was for Stormzy now. I thought that was his main job.
His main job, yeah. Exactly.
What do you do for a living, Jeff? Oh, you know Stormzy, the rapper. Yeah. Well, when he wants to have a knockabout on the court, that's he gives me a bell and he pays me handsomely for it.
And you know what? My career counselor at school told me that this would be my future, and I was like, no. Look at me now. There's still hope in the school system.
Did you have the same software package that we had where you kind of like answered questionnaire and then it kind of gave you an idea of jobs that might be suited to you?
And you and tell you you're either going to be a mortician or something like this, or, you know.
Well, it seemed to always tell you that it would give you the option of being a leather worker, even though, as far as I could tell, the only question that were directly related to that was, do you like working with leather? And even if you said no, it still was like, what about leather worker? I know you don't like leather now, but you might grow to love it.
This is the most unimaginative career counsel. The most unimaginative career aptitude test. Do you want to work in a bank? Do you want to be a teacher? Because you said yes to wanting to be a teacher, we think you should be a teacher.
You might be a teacher. Well, it was just slightly more esoteric than that, wasn't it? It was like, do you like money? Well, you might like the bank. So we brought in Beadle and Ugbo early on in the channel. And then we had a nice long sit and a ponder, and then did our last bits of business on the last day, where we brought in, I don't know which order they actually arrived in, but they're listed in this order, so I'm going to go with it. Christian Pedersen came in next. And I think we can all agree, perfect signing, great impact, and he's going to be the man that keeps us up this season.
Sure. Sure. How many appearances has he made for Sheffield Wednesday so far?
Was it two, maybe? Or was it just the one?
It might have been two. Did he get sent off in one?
He definitely played one, was really rough.
Yeah.
And then I'm just trying to see now. So he played in the 4-0 loss to Huddersfield, got himself a yellow. Pardon me. And then played against Birmingham, but came off early doors with an injury, I think. Just double checking.
And not to be seen since, I believe. Is that the case? Has he even had a berth on the bench since then?
Oh, he came on in the 88th minute in the Birmingham game, and then we've not seen him since.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Yeah. He just looked like somebody that hadn't played very much football, didn't he? I think that's, to be fair to him, if he could go further and say he looked like somebody whose legs have gone, but let's give him the benefit of the doubt and just say he hadn't played very much football and looked rusty.
I thought he looked okay until the floodgates opened against Huddersfield. I seem to remember him getting quite a bit of abuse from Wednesday fans online. And I thought it was a little bit harsh.
We always like to have a scapegoat.
Yeah, that's true.
When you get a 4-0 pommeling off your nearest rivals. It's nice to.
Oh, jeez, what a horrendous loss that was.
That was brutal. Just as a kind of digression, maybe we shouldn't talk about this, but. What did you make of the Nico Schultz episode?
Oh, wow.
Just because that's left back.
Yeah, that happened, didn't it?
It did. Well, it didn't, but yeah, it nearly did.
I think that this feels difficult to say. No, let's get into it. Here's the thing I think that is difficult overall. I think myself, as well as society, I think maybe I'm a touch better But I think we have a difficult time with, I think we have a difficult time with acknowledging how we should mentally feel about people who are, who have done criminal acts as, as he has. I wholeheartedly support the initiative to say we're not having this at our football club. And from people that I don't know what is, there's just a lot bigger feelings about how are we supposed to kind of rehabilitate people. It's definitely, it's definitely way too soon to be having that conversation about Nico Schultz.
Yeah. It's also,
I'm glad we made a good decision, and I'm glad I'm not entirely sure how it went down, but I'm glad management and the operations of the club just said no to that. I mean, we're also looking at, it's giving me a lot of strong memories about Chad Evans, which is also coming back to me from the stance of thinking about Elias Chair, because that is going on right now. And that is just going to keep going on for a long time, because that's how that seems to be the pace, that, you know, the criminal system works, which blows my mind, honestly. And like the system that we have set up for that is just, sorry, Richard, what was that?
Well, I'm just, the Elias Chair thing seems really odd. I know it's a different system to our own, but the fact that you can be found guilty for essentially like trying to murder someone with a heavy object, and then because you've appealed, they're like, all right, fair enough, go back and do your job, you're fine.
Carry on with your job, And, you know, the same thing with Chad Evans of being like, well, if you're bad at your job and then you're found guilty, then you'll, then we'll fire you, then we'll get rid of you. Oh, but you're doing a good job, but then you've been found guilty of something criminal? Oh, keep playing. Keep playing. We'll just keep appealing and we'll keep bashing that snooze button until it's wild. It's absolutely wild. I've got to be honest with you. Like, I don't know. So anyway, I'm glad. I'm glad overall, I am glad that we didn't go back to Nico Schultz.
It's also one of those things in terms of nuance of position and things like that, which is obviously, it's hard, but I do think justice is one of those things, as you say, like, to, if we believe in a basic humanity, then we've got to believe that people can do
better. Be rehabilitated and do better. Yeah.
But the practicalities of that are very, very uncomfortable a lot of the time.
Yeah. No, it's a nasty thing to be looking into. It's not a fun element to be looking into of anyone's life, is it?
No. There's a lovely old delay on this feed, I think, which is making life slightly tricky.
Oh, wonderful.
But I think the other thing with Schultz in particular is, regardless of the ins and outs of it, I always forget the name of the striker that played for, is it Lee Clark that played for Notts County?
You're thinking of, I know who you're thinking of. He's the one who played for West Brom, wasn't he?
Yeah.
It's not Lee Clark.
It's not Lee Clark. No, I shouldn't besmirch his name.
I think we should keep guessing incorrectly who it is just to tar more people, honestly, in the process.
Who do you think it could be? Who do you think it might be?
What a great dinner party game.
Yeah. But apologies, I'm blanking on his name and I can't really think of a sensible... I'm sure people will be like screaming at their podcast. But I think that there's also, in terms of that kind of rehabilitation, there's that element of justice being served. So if we've decided you do X crime and that has this charge on it and you've done your time, then that's when you would be brought back into society and given a chance to show that you've changed your ways. I think the thing with Schultz is it's hard to shake that feeling of, money and something untoward, maybe, because he wasn't charged with anything. The case fell down. So it's also that kind of the Mason Greenwood thing of, well, we've been given an insight into this because of social media. We've seen like the messages exchanged, and your gut doesn't feel that those are comfortable things or things that should be happening. And so even though justice didn't do its job, the justice system didn't do its job.
Yep.
I don't think it's society's place then to replace it, but it's hard to, like, you can tell yourself something where you're like, okay, this person did something. They have, as a society, we've agreed that it's punished in this way. They've done that punishment and now they are re-entering society. Is a very different thing from, because of this person's wealth and influence, they have skipped away from the justice of this. And whilst they are not a criminal, we know that they've committed an act that actually is, you know, so that's a harder thing, I think, to get your head around. And it's harder to figure out what we do with that. Thankfully, it's not our job to actually decide, but it's a more uncomfortable position. You end up with the weird thing where, like, Man United, their statement on Greenwood was like, oh, we've looked into it. It's all fine. He's great. He's a wonderful character. But we'll never play football. This is Greenwood's Beamish boy, is one of the very best in our society, but we don't want to see him here ever.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And, you know, just making me think about, this is completely different change of subjects, but you reminded me about the head of Boeing stepping down. And like, that is not kind of taking accountability.
No, absolutely. Lee Hughes, just to...
Lee Hughes, yes.
Lee Hughes. And kind of played up to his pantomime villain role in a way that, you know, kind of relished it in a way that did make you did make it hard to go.
Yeah.
Well, they served his time.
Just to keep going for some more Lees that we just want to kind of tar Rich. Do you think it was Lee Trundle? Do you think it was Lee Trundle?
Yeah, Lee Trundle. I think it was probably Lee Trundle. Given his career trajectory, that's the sort of thing he got into, yeah. Rob Lee?
Rob Lee.
Just people with Lee in their name.
Just people with Lee. Anybody with Lee. Just always the count. Always. You just, there's a type, isn't it? And it's anybody with Lee in their name. Yeah. We try very hard to get, sued on this.
Yeah, we do.
We do. We try. We try really, really hard, guys.
But obviously, parody.
Allegedly. Yeah.
Allegedly. Yeah. You know, satire. It's satire.
It is satire, yeah.
Satirical comment on the world at large. And a man that sort of plays the game with the air of a satirical comment was the last edition, Ian Carlo Povida.
Povida. Fucking Povida. The man Rich and I love to go, Povida! Fucking Povida!
Povida! What's he up to, Povida?
Which is hilarious, but we get to kind of pastiche this, you know, irate man on the cop or man on the north.
Yes.
Because he's been rather good, hasn't he?
Has.
He's a bit good, isn't he?
Yeah.
There's another contentious thing I said. You can completely agree with my difficult thoughts about rehabilitating people who've offended criminally, but you'll be like, that's fine. The bit where he said, Povida, a bit good, didn't like it at all.
I actually think he's a lot good. So
he's a lot good, yeah.
I really hope he's not broken for too much longer. I know we're hearing vaguely positive things about his return, but another one that an outsized impact because he just seems to have been machine tooled for a role that we've given him. The closing down, the being comfortable on the ball, making things happen, just allowing things to borrow some parlance from the young, allowing things to cook because he's so comfortable on the ball. But we're not rushing situations. I think there is a bit of like, you can force things. Let them cook, says Povida. Oh, what do you think of his post-match zingers when we win as well on social media?
I don't believe I'm too au fait with them. I've got to be honest. What a terrible thing for me to say.
Oh my goodness.
What an awful Wednesday podcaster I am.
This is like saying, you know, I appreciate the acting of Elvis Costello, and I go, do you know he sings, Luke? Let me try. I hope this doesn't take too long. But he does little off-the-cuff remarks to folks. Maybe does he take them down? He might be a cheeky enough boy that he just takes them down. Sorry about this. Oh yeah, so there you go. So for the listener at home, I'm showing Luke a picture of Ian Povida sat in the stand at Millwall, and then his tweet was easy to tame lions. Important 3 points.
Yes,
and then. And then he's got hunting down robins with the lads. And then Rugby Union FC boxed off on to Tuesday. Plymouth, when we beat Plymouth, crashed the boat. It's mainly badge related, I think, he's going for. But just a top lad.
Top lad.
Top lad with Bute Bants.
Exactly. It's funny because I just felt it was like,
go on.
Okay, I just felt like him coming in, it felt like a real added bonus, I want to say. You know, it felt like a huge bonus of having somebody with that role coming in.
Yeah, not something we were sort of, we didn't know what we were missing.
No.
Really.
It's a bit like once I heard Saul Williams talk about Outkast as Hey Ya and saying that, you know, the people who, you know, it's like you haven't had Vitamin D. And then you get some vitamin D. That's what you realize that you've been missing. So that's what the public felt with Outkast's Hey Ya. And maybe that's we of Wednesday fans are seeing with Povida.
Beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And I can tell you, folks, he wasn't reading that. That was off the top of the dome.
Hey Da.
Hey Da.
Comma, Povi.
Lovely stuff.
So it's been a difficult thing. I just want to say with Povida being out, I can't stop doing it now. With Povida being out, it's just the feeling of I have that feeling of when we were kind of missing such a pivotal player, someone who is, you know, you could say different gravy. You feel like we would be okay to be without them. Cause I feel like it's always that situation where I'm like, I feel like we have enough in the tank and enough in the squad to run a game plan and to go and score goals and do damage. But it's been a huge miss. I mean, we first saw that with going up against Leeds in a very rich run of form. And then we can, you know, they're being, you know, being decent club owners, but also indecent club owners to us by saying you can't play him against us, which, I get.
I think as well, it's unfortunately we've had the double whammy of our two main creative forces because Bannon was carrying a bit of an injury and being sort of, managed through games, and is, you know, we've seen him come off more often than we've ever seen in his Wednesday career. The last few weeks of this season, and then obviously he's picked up an injury himself. And then to have that coincide, because I think that was one of the lovely things with Povida coming in is he's almost taken up the slack from Bannon dropping off slightly. I think Bannon has, in many ways, had an incredible season on a personal level, given his vintage. but it's just natural. He's only human, and there's been bigger gaps as he's got older, and it's been a long, hard season, and he's had to play in a way he's never really played before, pressing and tackling back and things like that. I think he was even sort of joking about, you know, I've never made a tackle in my life. I've made four in this game. That was a few weeks ago. But I think the nice thing was Poveda was able to bring in some legs, but also back him up creatively. So it wasn't all on Bannon. And I think that has been helpful for the balance of the squad. I think that three, if we have Poveda, Volks and Bannon, that three works really nicely together somehow, with Bannon in a kind of more relaxed further back role, Volks doing his thing, and then Poveda's able to kind of have that free rein and make things happen with his comfort on the ball and his vision. It's a really nice trio, but it's almost a bit like we're in that position that we were when we got relegated with Luongo, and you sort of like, if Luongo plays, looking ahead at these like last seven games, if we can get that trio together for five of them, we've got a much, much better chance of staying up than if it's just two or three of them. Like that's how influential that trio is, I think, together. And Poveda's obviously a huge part of that, and we're incredibly well done. I'd like to say, I think he had a goal disallowed, didn't he? I think he could add goals. He looks like he's got goals in him. Mm-hmm. I'd like him to start bagging occasionally. That's my one. It's not a criticism, but I think he's had situations where he could have done a little bit better, and he's been overly unselfish. And then I think he had one chucked off unfairly as well, which he took pretty nicely. So hopefully we'll get him back sooner rather than later, and he'll continue that kind of vein of form. Okay, so we've sort of done the transfer window bit. Mm-hmm. We mentioned form there. So recent form, we had a run of four wins in a row, which in a typical, or four wins out of, five wins out of six, and in typical Sheffield Wednesday fashion, we went from 23rd in the table to 23rd in the table in that time. We've since had a harder run of things. I don't think any of us were expecting points from Leeds or Ipswich, but we maybe did worse than expected in those two games somehow.
No, definitely, yeah.
And then we've just had the Swansea draw, which feels disappointing. I don't know whether it's hard to tell, because Swansea are kind of in that, they're like lower middle. If it's two leagues, they're at the top of the second league. If it's three leagues, they're at the bottom of the middle one. So in some ways, not a team that we would automatically imagine we'd win against. But in my head, I definitely had it as one that we could and maybe should win. And during the match, it felt like one we should have won. I don't really know how I feel about that draw coming away from it. Maybe just more the rarity of getting any draws, which doesn't happen to us very much.
That's true. Yeah.
So what do you make of the last sort of four or five games or so? And
I mean, just big disappointment about drawing at Swansea. That really felt like two points dropped.
Yeah.
I know they're in a position which is mildly precarious. I feel like they're probably just above the bubble, but I don't know. I think they're a team. I think, like, if we look around us, like, Blackburn are probably a team that is showing an example of a team that gets complacent and then they just sink like a stone. And Wednesday have been that in the past. And I think we've seen other teams around us do that. And
the Irvine season.
Very much so. Very much so. And then I guess Gary Monk, right? You know, the kind of feeling of third at Christmas and then where? And then what? You know, and then just plummeting from those heights. So, you know, I could see why they would probably think they probably still need to get something against a team like Sheffield Wednesday. But really, really, that's such a golden opportunity to get some points, to get 3 points on the board. You know, when we were winning on the live table, you know, we were temporarily out of the bottom three. And there's a lot of work to do, and it won't just be caused by one result, 7 games to go. But if we could just get our heads above water just to breathe for a quick second, it would just feel like such a momentary relief. I know I don't think that role is going to give any sense of complacency to the players that we have to get going with this. But like, it was a little bit heartbreaking, honestly, too. I didn't get the chance to watch. I was just continually checking the score, hoping somehow in the final minutes that we would somehow get a second. Big disappointment. And then, like, you know, as you said, we've performed worse than expected against Leeds and Ipswich because, as I think I texted you, I said it was embarrassing at 5-0 against Ipswich.
Yeah. It's been, well, I wonder if this is a sensible time to sort of bring ourselves on to a, I do love a pun, so run the reel over Danny. I think it was interesting hearing. So I didn't manage to watch the Swansea game, but I did manage to listen. And absolutely delightful having Pato on the co-commentary. What a delight. Firstly, to listen to his soft... is it Edinburgh he's from? I think it is Edinburgh, isn't it? His Edinburghian, Burian brogue was lovely. But just getting a few insights, and I think a few slips of the tongue that he probably shouldn't have said, or shouldn't, you know, Gassama came on and Rob was saying, oh, he's an exciting player, isn't he? And like, Callum Patterson's just like, a frustrating boy as well sometimes. And so that was kind of a little bit off the cuff, I think, probably afterwards he thought, I maybe shouldn't have said that. But he was talking about role and saying, you know, he never parked the bus. He's absolutely against it. And he sort of said, you know, we've had experienced championship managers and they sort of know, he was sort of saying that, you're saying they know how to get through these games and how to win these difficult games. And then with Roll, he was saying, well, he's young and he's fearless. He won't listen to anybody else or something along that. It wasn't absolutely damning, but it was like I did wonder if I'm putting the cart before the horse here, but so that my lead into this really should have been, how do you feel about this thing of we'll just give it a go against these big teams, against Leeds, against Ipswich? We'll have a really attacking team, and so we're not going to sit back and try and pinch a goal. We're going to just roll the dice and see what happens. And I think part of me is like, as a fan, yeah, why not? Like, we're not expecting anything, and maybe a miracle will happen. And it's better to, you know, you miss every shot you don't take. You don't win the lottery without buying a ticket. But actually then sitting through a 6-0 drubbing by Ipswich is quite a thing. And I think psychologically it's difficult for fans, and it must be difficult for players as well. But it just made me wonder whether there's senior heads in that dressing room thinking, this is daft playing a back four against Leeds. We're going to get taken to pieces, or like against Ipswich, that was the back four. We're going to get torn to pieces. And after 20 minutes of getting torn to pieces, you've got the opportunity to make a change there and solidify the team. So, yeah, I don't know. I apologies for that being a bit of a kind of horn of plenty in terms of opinions, but what I'm just going to hand it up to you as a big sloppy mess, Luke, and see what you want to make of it. What are your thoughts?
Big sloppy mess. How do I think about that? What are my thoughts in role in general, or just that situation? What do you want to start with?
Well, I think it's part and parcel, because I think we've seen the good stuff of it, and it's been exciting. We have way more shots. it's just, is that kind of purity of thought?
It doesn't feel cavalier, or at least from what I've seen. I didn't get to see the capitulation against Ipswich. I don't feel Millwall, like even when it's been the worst. Millwall was one of them. Again, another game I've missed. So sorry.
Yeah.
Some games of football I've not had the chance to see, unfortunately. It can be kind of a bit cavalier and a bit over kind of excited and a bit over kind of optimistic.
You know, with managers who do that. I've never felt it's, at least hilariously outside of those games where you said it has been, that I haven't seen. I haven't felt that. So, and I mean, there's overall just an overall kind of large gratitude. The fact that, like, it feels like, the season starts and it's like, hey, we're Sheffield Wednesday. Hey, you know, we might not have the biggest budget. You know, that, hey, we're coming up, we're riding that optimism. Yeah. We're on that train. We're going to keep this momentum going. And then just all of that was just sucked from every event. And then the future events with the hiring of Šiško and how he was playing, to the point of saying, you know, now it just feels, I feel like I have serious egg on my face having any kind of remote molecule of optimism going into this. Any crumb that I've kind of savored just makes me feel shameful, honestly. So there's a feeling like we should never been in that position, but then since it's happened, I think we've kind of come to accept, and seeing everything that's happened with the season, to then say, to get to here on the roll and say we're in a position where we can actually, it looks feasible that we can get out of the bottom three, which feels incredible. Like, if it wasn't for Roll, we'd be battling Rotherham for that last place in the league.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Who've just had such a horrific capitulation, I want to say, not to just focus on the Millers. But, you know, I'm looking at this because I'm thinking about this, because one of the things I keep bringing up, you'll see me kind of flicking through my phone while I'm chatting to you, Rich, is the form table. You know, because, like, I know what the standings are. I'm very au fait with that. What are the form? And, you know, still, even after a pretty rocky kind of five games, of which a draw, two losses and two wins, still 7 points from five games, still means we're mid-table, still means we're ahead of Blackburn, Huddersfield, Birmingham, Plymouth and Rotherham. And that, my friends, are the five teams at the rock bottom of the form table over five games. And if you go to 10... it's not that well. Huddersfield, I think, have had a slightly better period over that, but we're still better than them in that period as well. So it feels like we've just been put ourselves in such a great, amazing situation, and we wouldn't have done that without Roll. So even for the negatives, the Millwall game, the Ipswich game, any of the kind of things you can think of, it's still, I'm still taking it, you know, 99% of the time.
Yeah. I broadly agree. I was doing a bit of devil's advocate work, but I've been bowled over by what he's managed to achieve with. I mean, this is a shockingly bad squad. I very little doubt that on paper it's between us and Rotherham, and probably I'd pick them over us on paper. He is working with buttons and zips and, you know, things that shouldn't even be in that draw. You know, it's just, it's, so the fact that we're in the fight and still hopeful for the remainder of the season, I think is a huge, huge testament to what he's achieved so far. It's just an interesting, I think it's one of those things, a bit like we were sort of saying, like, the principles and absolutes on paper are one thing, and then kind of living through them is another. I think it's natural. He's a young manager. He's had to learn some mistakes along the way. I think the Millwall game was transformative in that it then brought us into that period where we had Volks in the midfield, and we had a good run of form after that So it's almost like we need to kind of like learn the lesson in the hardest possible way. It's that kind of tough love thing. And but then if you're learning the it's if you don't learn the lessons is the problem. But I think we do tend to learn the lessons as we move forward. There have been a few and I suppose we had a case in point with Millwall and that we beat them 2-0 at their place, which a fairly comfortable 2-0. So having been way too open and had them play through us so easily, we were much, much better equipped for the next time we met them. The next thing is, what do we... we don't want to get into the talk about whether he stays or whether he goes, or there will be admirers, I'm sure. But I don't remember a time, you've not experienced this firsthand, but the groundswell of support for this manager is truly incredible. I mean, it's like a personality cult. It's like being at a Trump rally or something, you know, like this guy walks on water. And he seems to be a nice dude, which is obviously not the most important thing. If you're winning the games, I don't really care if you're a terrible person, to be honest. But to an extent, there's levels. But yeah, the fact he seems to be a nice dude on top of things is great. So that brings us on to a bit of a hint towards. Towards Easter, vibes for the Last Supper 7, Super 7. It works, don't worry. It works better written down. Like all good gags. So I'll run you through the fixtures remaining. We have tomorrow, we've got Borough away. We then have QPR away. Norwich at home, Stoke at home, Blackburn away, West Brom at home, and then my page has reloaded really helpfully. So I can't tell whether Sunderland is home or away. It's away, isn't it? The last game
is it? It is away. Sunderland. Yeah, away last game.
Yeah. So, do we want to go through fixture by fixture how we're feeling about them, or do you want to just give a kind of pure vibe summary?
Let's go through each one. That sounds good.
Okay. So now we've got I wouldn't say a spy in the camp because he's definitely a loyalist, but I have spoken to our mutual friend who is from the Borough, and I've politely requested that they roll over and have their bellies tickled tomorrow. So hopefully he's got the word through to the team. We've just got to do our bit, haven't we? We've all got to do what we can. It's like a war effort. We've got to all pull in the same direction. What are you thinking? So, he said that they're usually pretty accommodating in these sort of situations. See Rotherham for further information, but you'll see what he can do. So you can't say fairer than that.
True. True. Well, you just got to ask, haven't you, really?
Yeah. And he probably said that mid chewing a Parmo, I imagine.
Of course. Yes. Yeah. with his thick Borough brogue. I'm glad you managed to translate that for us all, Rich. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you for doing the big Borough work.
Borough are 10th. They've drawn their last two, but they won three before that. So they're in pretty good fettle. And probably thinking they're probably at that cusp of they probably can't make the playoffs now. But if they absolutely went on a tear, they might sneak in. They're at 55 points, and 64 would get them into the playoffs.
Yeah, always a team who seem to be going through, either seem to be doing as well as I think they kind of expect for the stature of the club and their kind of history, or they seem to be having a bit of a mini crisis.
Yeah.
And a mini crisis that I would probably say that, like, we would love to aspire to be as average as they are, honestly.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't see, weirdly, like the Riverside is quite a good hunting ground for Sheffield Wednesday.
I think you're right.
Like, yeah. we have had a few very memorable results under some poor, you know, having a poor kind of squad and setup.
Yeah.
You know, Stevie May having a fun time, Big Dave, Andy New,
yeah,
going and doing well there. You know, so yeah, we've had some good times. I feel like it's probably one of the ones I think we'll win. Personally, I think this feels like it feels like a good potential for 3 points.
Yeah, I would tend to agree. It's one that we've got to be hopeful going in. I'm surprised that they're as high in the league table as they are, in a way. just kind of vaguely watching their season from afar. Just sort of surprised me where they were up to. I'm having a look at the previous record. So we lost 3-1 there in 2021. But we beat them the previous three visits, I think, four visits maybe. So yeah, fairly good hunting ground for us. Okay, so we're penciling in that as a potential win. What about Queen's Park Rangers? They are, again, they're kind of a mixed bag over the last. They're on 43 points, so they're definitely in the relegation tussle. One drawn, lost, drawn, won. They've got a palindrome of form over the last five games.
Yeah, I mean, in kind of looking at that, kind of their 11th in the last five games in the form table, as you said, that's like, you know, that's 8 points that they've picked up. I don't feel so confident about this one. I feel like there's just so much kind of going against us in this. It just feels like, I don't know, QPR seemingly, have they had kind of financial issues? I thought I heard some stuff about how they owe the league money. There's also the added situation of the chair situation.
I think they still owe money from when they went up and came back down again. Do you know, like, do you remember they like massively overspent that season?
And they had to settle up. They had to settle up for the FFP first. So that's what they owe money from. Okay.
Yeah, I think so.
Right. So probably in a precarious position, but probably not irritating the EFL gods to be bothered by them a great deal. I just think this one feels tricky. I remember, I think it was under Monk we went to QPR, under Warburton, and we absolutely just took them apart. I remember that.
Yeah.
And then I remember thinking that was going to happen again, and then it very much didn't. So I feel like this one is probably a loss, I'm going to say, for me. How do you feel about that for you?
Yeah. It seems odd out of the two to say we feel that we might beat Middlesbrough and lose to QPR, given the relative kind of league positions. But I know what you mean. And similarly, well, not similarly, the opposite of the Riverside, we don't tend to have a great record going to their place. I remember the season under Monk. We absolutely tore them to shreds, and then they came to Hillsborough and I think got a very creditable draw, maybe, or I don't know. But it was a completely different kettle of fish compared to the first time we played them. I'm happy to. I mean, let's err on the side of being being cautious with these things. So I would hope we might get a draw there, but then we don't do that very often. And it also feels like one of those with the pressure. We're not very good at turning it up when the pressure's absolutely on. See the previously discussed Huddersfield game. We then welcome Norwich on a Tuesday night to Hillsborough.
So midweek, Norwich, who are kind of in the promotion picture, I want to say.
Yeah.
They're currently six, so they're in a position where they need to. They're not one of the three teams who are obviously at the battle of the top. I mean, I think there's a really fantastic and really interesting relegation narrative in this tier. For the outsider as well, who's going to go up in the top two spots out of Ipswich, Leeds, and Leicester is pretty fascinating as well. I've got to say, there's some great value for this division in terms of like looking on as an outsider. For us who are involved in this, it's a little bit more difficult. I'm trying to kind of look at like how are Norwich kind of doing form wise. Oh wow, they're up there with Ipswich, so they have 12 points in the last five. I think this might be. I'm going to say, I feel like one of this game or Stoke. Actually, weirdly, I think like I'm going to look at this. We can go on to Stoke in the separately.
Yeah,
but I'm just saying from that kind of two, I think we're going to take 3 points in one of them.
One of them.
I think we might beat Norwich and then lose to Stoke. I'm going to just go ahead and just say that's my next two results. I'm going to say we're going to beat Norwich and we're going to lose to Stoke. That's what I'm going to say.
Well, it feels like a fixture where we've generally punched above our weight, I feel like, the Norwich game.
We have great results against Norwich. Did we have a period of going like 13 games unbeaten against Norwich?
Yeah,
in the last seven seasons.
I'm looking now, and we've lost the last three and four out of the last five. So I might have been making this up, but I think we, considering they've kind of perennially been top of the division that we've been in more often than not, I think through the years we've tended to do a little bit better than expected. We've got more wins and more points than you probably would have thought coming out of there. Maybe hasn't been the case for the last few. Stoke are funny, aren't they? Because I think Stoke were one of these teams where everybody was sort of going, sinking like a stone. They're going to be. But they've kind of put on a bit of a tear, haven't they? They've won three out of the last five. I think if I was being pessimistic, I'd probably put both these down as losses. It would be nice to come out of it with one or 3 points, but I don't think we can kind of count on any of them, if that makes sense. I know you can't count on any of this, but in my kind of little head tally, I think that's a sort of, it's a very tricky week. Those two back-to-back. We then travel to Blackburn.
So, Rich, what I'm going to actually do, I don't know if you've seen me, but I'm actually scribbling down in the background. I'm scribbling down the results, and I'm going to say how many points we get from our predictions. Okay. So if I had to hold you to a prediction on Norwich at home and then Stoke at home, what do you say? Norwich first.
I think we'd get a draw against Norwich and lose to Stoke.
Okay. There we go. We've done four out of seven, folks. We're going to number five, and that is a tricky one because we're away to Blackburn.
Away to Blackburn.
So when you managed to kind of speak in the borough language to Phil, did you also put in a good word to his wife Rachel, who's a Blackburn fan, to see if
I need to follow up with that. I hadn't thought that far ahead. I'm just having a look at our...
So here's the thing. So we've talked about teams that are not doing well. Blackburn are a team that a lot of people are saying are sinking like a stone because the form is bad. Apparently Smodics is injured as well.
He's
bagged 21 goals this season. So, you know, they're currently... on the form over five, they're in 20th position on five, and on the 10 games, they're in 19th. They've had 9 points from 10 games.
Yeah.
And on the five, 3 points from five. So not a happy place, Ewood Park.
Not a happy place. If we've got to believe we're going to win some games. And I think we've got to look at that one as one that we should be winning. It might be a very different situation in 5 games' time, but you'd be surprised.
I think we'll do it. I think we'll go there and I think we'll win. I think it has strong vibes of like the must-win games against Plymouth and Rotherham. Yeah. You know, we're a little bit out of form since then, but I think we'll bring it back out. I think Roll will whack it out the freezer and bug it in the microwave.
Very good. I was going to do a nice thing. I sort of forgot. I was making myself chuckle actually in the shower earlier, which is not a euphemism. But I was thinking about Roll and how analytical he is and looking at the numbers and things like that. And I was just like, you know, this thing of like going for it all the time. And it's like, I just imagine like every team meeting, he's like, we have run the numbers, we looked at the statistics, and turns out they don't like it up them. And also, so our ambition for the game is to go hard or go home. But I like the putting it, taking out the freezer and putting it in the oven analogy as well.
How do you think we'll do against Blackburn, Rich?
Yeah, I think if we're going to stay up, we've got to win that one. And I think we'll do it. I sincerely hope we'll do it. And I think we will.
Excellent.
My vibes get a bit less positive about the next game. West Bromwich.
And that is our last home game of the season.
Which, there is the Hillsborough factor. If you can get... I've just thought of this phrase, Luke, but if you can get that old lady rocking... It can really make amazing things happen.
Mm-hmm. If we can get said old lady rocking.
Yes.
And also I feel like that ended, like I say this from a very sunny but yet still cold, still spring is still on the way to coming to Calgary, Alberta, where I'm recording my half of the podcast. Mm. I've got to say, I imagine end of April, Saturday, 3 o'clock game at Hillsborough. I imagine it's going to be beautiful. That's my sunshine. Prediction. Glorious sunshine. And I feel like Wednesday play very well on those situations at home at Hillsborough. I bet a nice baking 22 degrees. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, we'll probably do something slightly racially insensitive about Roll and or Germany to kind of, there'll be some theme, I imagine, fan-wise. We'll all turn up as Wiener Schnitzel or pretzels.
Did I tell you the really hilarious thing I saw on Instagram, which was like, just as Richie were talking about the bagel place you went to on Brick Lane. You really reminded me that like, saw this great, great thing on social media, Instagram, where this American lady was living in Germany and she's saying, I really love Germany. However, the bagels here are not good. And then someone commented, was like, I wonder why there's no bagels, bad quality bagels in Germany. I wonder why.
Oh dear. Oh. So any hope, any glimmer of hope for the West Brom game? You think with the sun shining, it could be one of those special... If it was a night match as well, there's that thing.
Yeah.
It could be one of those special Hillsborough occasions.
Special night at Essex under the lights. Yeah. I think we might just scrape a draw on that one.
Okay. I'm going to be swept up in your sunny optimism, Luke. And go with the draw too.
You go with the draw too. Okay. I'm gonna be so optimistic like you. I'm gonna say one point.
I'm absolutely high as a kite. Might scrape a draw.
Jeff Hendrick, last minute goal, 1-1.
Yes. Yeah. So then, final game of the season.
Mm.
Now a 12:30 kickoff at the Stadium of Light. We won't be featured on Sunderland Till I Die because it's finished, and so, sadly. Did you manage to watch any of the last little nugget? They did like a little 3 episodes.
No, we didn't cover that on the podcast as well. That was
we did cover the first series, but
they did a free series. I think we did the first two.
We did the first two, so maybe we should do that at some point. But the third, yeah, the third is like a little. It's like 3 episodes, but it wraps up the promotion season from League One. So the whole of the second episode is the semi-finals.
Oh, I don't.
What's that?
Oh, okay. No, I don't think I've seen that. I was just laughing. So I was like,
did he do well?
Yeah, I don't want to say that.
Yeah. Luco 9. Well, it was against Wednesday, the semi-final.
Yeah, I don't want to watch that.
No, okay. Well, there's a little bit of an enjoyable thing because Luco 9 is talking about how he was told to man mark Barry Bannon. And so, like, Barry Bannon like dawdled on the ball on the byline very early on, so he like halved him, and Bannon got up and like dusted himself off, and he's like, "You have to work a lot harder than that to keep me out of this game."
Oh, and apparently,
apparently when we got the goal to get back to parity, Bannon and several others were like going, "That's it, you guys have lost it. That's it." It's done. You're done.
You're done.
You're done. That's it.
Yeah. You're done.
You're done. Which apparently that kind
but
of
now
I like the idea of that trash talking going on because that's also from Josh Windass's podcast performance. He was talking about the chatter at the Peterborough players in the greatest comeback of all time. It was just like. Yeah, we were telling them when when the second one went, it's like you guys are screwing this up. It's incredible. You guys are really messing up. And then they get like heightened from there.
you got to do it, haven't you? You've got to turn up and you got to do that shit.
So. You got to absolutely.
Yeah.
So, Sunlan.
Sunlan. Yeah, I think I think if I'm going by what I'm looking at my results, I think at this point, I don't think I'm going to be optimistic and think that it's not going to, but I know it's probably going to come down to it. So yeah. I know I'm going to be wrong with my predictions, but I think I don't think we're going to get anything. I think it's going to be a loss. I think it'll be a home win. Where exactly are Sunderland playing for anything right now?
They're nothing. They've won 51 points, so there's no chance of getting to playoffs, really. They'd have to make up 13 points. And similarly...
Because they were seemingly...
They're 10 points away from the relegation zone and a bit of change.
Wow. Because, I mean, I seem to remember them kind of being in the playoff picture.
Yeah,
but then I clearly forgot and missed the fact that they lost 6 games in a row.
Yeah, I think
from mid February to the beginning, beginning of March. I guess so. Yeah, I still feel like I think this is a loss for me. I think we'll probably maybe slightly edged out or comfortably beaten somehow.
So weirdly, I think it depends on. It's a bit of a potential banana skin because I think if we're kind of safe-ish on that day, we might get caught out and take a beating that puts us worryingly close. I think if we need to get something out of it, I'd expect us to win it. And I think in my prediction, we probably will need something out of it. And I think we'll, because I think it'll be one of those that they'll have the flip-flops on, they're already on holiday, and we'll just bowl them over.
So you think it's a win? You're putting in the W column?
It might be too little too late, but I think it's a win.
Interesting. So, by my predictions, I had as... beating Borough, losing to QPR, beating Norwich, losing to Stoke, beating Blackburn, drawing to West Brom and losing to Sunderland. So I'm predicting from those 7 games, 10 points. So I predict we end up on 49 points. Rich, you were saying, if we get this correctly, had that you'd beat Borough, Wednesday would beat Borough, draw against QPR, draw against Norwich, lose to Stoke, beat Blackburn, draw against West Brom, and then beat Sunderland. So, Rich, you're saying 12 points, and that would end up with 51 points for Wednesday.
I'm hoping so optimistic. Who knew?
So, if we're averaging between us, we end up with 50 points. Or in that ballpark, I mean, we're both kind of there, and I think we're a little heady, but I don't think we're that. It doesn't feel like we're that too optimistic.
No,
you know.
Do you know weirdly?
I think we feel like.
Yeah, sorry. Go on.
No, I think we weirdly feel like there are, you know, points on the board and points to go.
Points to win.
You know, points to be won. Yeah.
Yeah. I think West Brom aside, the hardest games in our last, whatever, 10 or so have gone, haven't they? Like Leeds and Ipswich are both staggeringly good teams. The points total for those three at the top is unbelievable. And we could have a situation where, it's going to be 90-plus points for three teams and one of them's not going to get promoted with that. It's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. In a way, I do just to kind of put my two penneth in that doesn't matter at all. I do want Ipswich to go up now that they've beaten us. I don't want to play them again next season. And it would be nice if one team that isn't drowning in parachute payments goes up. That would be lovely. Screw you, the Premier League. Those were the whoppers. And as we said, unfortunately, I think we did do worse than expected there. But we've now got a chance to kind of catch our breath and hopefully take some points on board. Do you know, my mental arithmetic is so poor that I thought I was being negative and you were being overly positive, but I've ended up with a higher points total.
I know. Yeah, I had the same thing as well. That was my same thing. I was going to say that. Yeah.
Which is very funny. Because I thought like I was being kind of almost brutal, and Luke's living in La La Land. Bloody Ryan Gosling over here tap dancing. next he'll be single handedly saving Jazz. Spoiler alert. Spoiler alert for the movie La La Land. Ryan Gosling saves Jazz.
It's too late now, Rich. You've already ruined it. You can't do the spoiler alert after you give the spoiler. People are still upset about us about the Sixth Sense.
Oh, dear.
And the Crying Game as well.
Yeah. Rosemary's Baby, yep. We just go run through the gamut. So that's our little bit of something that we've put together, isn't it, Luke?
Yeah, it is. I'm now disappointed, though, Rich. We didn't do each result and then spoil an M. Night Shyamalan film after the end of every
that's
result.
That's what we should have done, yeah. We can go back.
No, I think we're good.
I think we're good, aren't we? As per usual, it's been an absolute pleasure. I hope it's been enjoyable to listen to. I don't know whether it will be, but we just wanted to kind of get a few things off our chest and have a chinwag about things. It's been a mad old season. Oh, well done everyone for getting this far. The usual, look after yourselves, folks, look after each other, and who knows when we'll be back, but we'll be back at some point, I'm sure. Thanks again, Luke.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for this, everyone, and yeah, UTO.
UTO.
FTP. See you, everyone.
See you. Bye-bye. Thank you.